MotoQuad, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 479 for Wednesday, the 16th of December, 2015. We're back from our little week off, and myself, Harry Lloyd, is joined by Len Padilla, perhaps the most dedicated fan that was at the Super Prestigio.
Hey, Harry, how's it going?
Pretty good. Both you and I were at the Super Prestigio in slightly different roles. You were out there in the stands and probably the only person who watched every session that Marc Marquez wasn't involved in.
Yeah, like I mentioned on Twitter, it was kind of funny, especially during the practice in the morning. If Marquez wasn't on track, the people weren't in the stands. I don't know where they were going, but they were going away when he wasn't on track and then coming back when he was. It was very funny.
Yeah, it was pretty bizarre to see, to be honest. There weren't a huge amount of people there during the practice, but they really thinned out. And at some points, I think you might have been the only person in the stands.
It could have been. It sure felt like that. But when they came back, it was me and 100 screaming 12-year-old girls.
That definitely seems like that Venn diagram of your interests seems like it was one circle.
That was funny. Yeah, that was a little strange.
But yeah, I mean, that was kind of the... We'll get more into the nitty-gritty of the Super Prestigio in a second, but that was kind of the one thing that I took away from the whole affair is that just how obsessed people are with Marc Marquez and, you know, past year Rossi, Marquez, and Lorenzo to a lesser degree. After that, the popularity in racing in general, not just MotoGP, seems to quite rapidly drop off.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's good that he's got all the attention, that people are into it. It's just kind of bad that it's such a monoculture. It seems like it's another Rossi mania all over again.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised that there was no one who did try and knife Marquez, given various things that happened towards the end of the season. But I guess since we were at his air quotes home ground, that it was mostly fans and not too many people trying to get back at him for what he air quotes did to Rossi.
No.
But before we go on to the Super Prestigio, we do have a subscriber, a donator to thank. That is John Dixon. A big thank you to you for your donation. There's also one or two bits of news to quickly run through. Speaking of Valentino Rossi, he has officially withdrawn his appeal to the CAS. I'm not sure what the CAS could have done from now in terms of what they could have ruled, apart from that, the penalty was unjust. And if they had have ruled that, then I'm not sure what that would have done. But yeah, luckily everything involving that is now over, or hopefully over.
Yeah, like you said, it doesn't really matter a whole lot what he did or didn't do, but it's best just to have it all go away.
Exactly. So hopefully we can move on from that situation and can finally fully focus on 2016. Someone who's maybe putting a bit too much focus on 2016 is Simon Buckmaster, the owner/team manager of PTR Honda. He was tweeting at the official BSB account a couple of days ago, ruffling a few feathers, saying that when are they going to announce Leon Haslam joining GB Moto Kawasaki in BSB? And then a couple of hours later, he very cheekily said, oops, did I ruin the announcement? So, I guess Leon Haslam is going back to BSB, and Simon Buckmaster continues to make a lot of friends by tweeting announcements early.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. Somebody whose entire self-worth is based on, you know, being a grumpy, crusty old man, you just kind of wonder how that's going to go for him.
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting character. We've brought up his blogs a couple of times on the show before, and if you haven't read them, then I'd definitely go search them out, especially Stiggy the Snake. If you just Google search Stiggy the Snake and Simon Buckmaster, you'll probably be able to... bring it up, and that's definitely a very interesting topic for anyone to read over during the off season. Because
fast friends, those two.
Yeah, he does not mince his words, which is in some ways good, but mostly hilarious.
Definitely.
So now on to the Super Prestigio. I was lucky enough to go to Rufia on Thursday for the official training session, and one thing that immediately stood out is just how good Mies, Baker, and Marquez are. At the start of the morning, it was quite cold there. So, you know, you only had a couple of guys like Juan Mir and Maria Herrera. You know, they're looking pretty good. Xavier Simeon, you know, he's impressing. But as soon as guys like Mies and Baker got out on track, just in on their first flying lap, you could immediately tell that they were another level. And that was sort of true in the stadium as well on Friday and Saturday, that, you know, all of the other riders, you know, Nico de Rol, he's taken a while to get in, you know, not really getting too sideways. But from the go, the Americans and also Marquez are just absolutely on it and pushing 110%. It's incredible to see the difference so immediately and so clear.
Yeah, and I think there's even a difference that maybe we didn't see, but we got sort of a hint of between the Americans and Marquez even. The real difference for me watching them was, and it was more evident with Baker than with Mies, you know, I think it's just different riding styles. Baker looked like he was cruising, like he could do the speed that he was doing for 50 more laps, and Marquez was letting it all hang out just to barely keep up.
Yeah, definitely. Marquez had, I think it was two crashes and one almost crash during practice, whereas, as you say, Baker almost looked slow. He was so relaxed. That's definitely something that I noticed as well, is just the riding style difference between Mies and Baker. Was Mies was very aggressive. Mies is a fair bit smaller physically than Baker, so maybe he needs to ride that bit more aggressive. But yeah, Baker was definitely on rails and just putting in the laps and really, really consistent. And as you say, neither Mies nor Baker really made too many mistakes or really looked like they were right on the edge, whereas Marquez and all those other guys were pushing and falling off one or two times. What was also interesting is that in Rufia, Mies and Marquez swapped bikes. Marquez's bike was rumoured to cost around €40,000 plus, whereas Baker's bike had some suspension and an exhaust that he'd bought from America in his suitcase. So slightly different levels of motorcycle there.
But I think it kind of shows that, especially in dirt track, it's, you need to have the right base equipment to do the job. But I don't think it's all about, you know, super trick equipment.
That's also sort of what Mies said after he tried Marquez's bike, is that Mies said, no, I like my bike better. Sure, Marquez's bike has, you know, a fancy exhaust, traction control, and some fancy stuff like that. But, you know, my bike's set up how I like it. And as we saw throughout the weekend, is that even the guys on the slightly more stock bikes were able to keep up with people like Marc Marquez, who had a super trick bike. Both the American guys, all they really did was bring over exhaust, suspension, and an ECU from the US, and otherwise it was just stock bikes that guys like Tony Elias and Ricky Cardoso had gotten for them as a bit of a favour.
Now, you mentioned traction control. I was talking to a friend at the Super Prestigio the other day, and he mentioned the same thing, that the rumour was that Marquez had traction control and that he had, you know, HRC and practically NASA behind him, you know, helping him set the whole thing up. Where does that come from? I mean, is there any traction control that would really help on a dirt track bike?
I'm not sure. I couldn't find it out. I tried to ask some people. Marquez's bike was the only bike I still have a laptop plugged into it. So they were clearly doing something with the electronics on that bike or gathering some sort of data that no one else had. In terms of engineers, I think Marquez had about four or five guys from his GP crew there. Whereas, fair enough, Baker and Mies, they had like three or four guys with them as well. But their setups in the pits definitely seemed a bit more homemade. You know, there were a couple of folding chairs and that was about it. Whereas Marquez and his brother had a nice carpet, you know, some nice toolboxes, everything laid out. But I'm not sure exactly how the traction control played into it. And maybe that was something that everyone just sort of, you know, tossed out there to try and demonstrate how advanced Marquez's bike was. But in general, I think it was Bradley Smith who said that to be competitive at the Super Prestigio, you need to spend about €30,000. And that's why guys like Bradley Smith weren't there, is because for them, it's just not worth the money. Because, you know, guys like Marquez, they get all their stuff for free from Honda. Whereas someone like Bradley Smith would have to buy his own bike, sort out his own mechanics, his own travel. So not really financially viable.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying about the pits. When we took a cruise through the pits halfway through the racing, and it was amazing. It was the same last year. I mean, it was amazing the difference between, like you said, the Rufea gang had their own little corner in the pits area, their own little paddock sort of thing, and everybody else was like a guy holding somebody's bike, like Jordi Torres. It was his bike on a stand, him and some other guy in a folding chair, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, a little toolbox.
Yeah, and Torres's bike looked like it was from about 2005. Both Jordi Torres and Marcos Ramirez were sort of competing for worst bike there, I think, because, you know, neither of them really looked like a race bike. It looked like the sort of bike that you'd have if you lived on a farm to get round.
Yeah. But, you know, they were, and I can think you could tell by Jordi's riding, you know, he's probably late to the whole dirt track game.
Yeah, there were definitely one or two riders who were maybe not super prepared for it. Jordi Torres and Nico Tirol were a bit timid at times, but you could definitely see them improving. And that was one of the really interesting things, was talking to guys like Chris Carr. He was commentating, obviously won a fair few Grand Nationals. Was Chris Carr was really impressed by Juan Mir when we were in Rufia, saying that Mir was one of the guys he saw improve the most over the day. And that was the other thing I noticed in Rufia, is that every time Marquez, Baker and Mies were on track together, Marquez would always, air quotes, make a mistake and drop back behind the two Americans to then try and follow them and learn. So Marquez is always racing and always trying to learn from these people. He's not gonna sit back and get beat, despite what some people may have said about Valencia.
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier, he was trying hard in every heat race, in every practice, and usually crashing two or three times a corner and then recovering.
Yeah, there's a fair few really impressive photos of Marquez maybe getting a bit too sideways. And that was one of the big differences between the Europeans and the Americans, is that, especially with Marquez, he struggled a lot more on corner exit than the two Americans. So Marquez was losing out a bit more. Maybe that's because he's, you know, used to riding a MotoGP bike, so he's quite used to, you know, diving in on the brakes, and he was quite strong in corner entry. But both the Americans sort of had him down on corner exit. And yeah, I mean, there are a couple of other really impressive riders. Omori Masatoshi, the Japanese rider, he's not really a racer, more of a drift specialist. But Omori was definitely impressive. He managed to win one of the open finals, and he was getting it especially sideways. I didn't get a chance to see the little drift contest they had between guys like Baker, Omori, and Alan Birtwistle. Was that any good, or was it a bit not
that's
great?
That's exactly when I was in the pits, and I heard lots of ooing and aahing, but I didn't see it. I'm hoping to, you know, download it and watch it at some point. But from what I heard, Omori was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely one or two cool YouTube videos of Omori, you know, scraping handlebars and sparks flying off and all that sort of stuff. So definitely give that a Google search if you're interested. But yeah, Omori was really impressive. Jonas Kilmakorpi, the Swedish rider, he was also very impressive, and a lot of people had him down for maybe a bit of a surprise win. Unfortunately, friend of the show, Oliver Brindley, he had qualified on pole for the open class, but his bike had developed a misfire so that... you know, he couldn't catch up to anyone down the straights, albeit they're very small straights. I think they're about 80 metres. So unfortunately, Oliver didn't make the final this year, but he was on pole. And track conditions also played a big part. Brindley had gotten on pole sort of because of his misfire, because with the misfire and when the qualifying was on, the track was in quite a bad state. It was incredibly dusty. And so with the misfire, all the riders were saying you have to go slow to go fast. So that misfire sort of forced Oliver to go a bit slow.
Yeah, what you were saying both about Ollie Brindley and Jonas Kilmakorpi, they were really impressive to watch, but I think they were both sort of doing this thing that was typical of all the Europeans and very different from the Americans. They were, especially Jonas, super, super fast into the corners.
Mm.
And, you know, big lean angles and really impressive looking, especially Jonas. You know, he had a special... A purpose-built bike. He was riding a Persang, not just a tricked-out Honda. But they weren't getting out of the corners nearly as well, you know. And I think that's where the difference is between, you know, obviously, you know, being a really excellent racer. Jonas is a long track specialist, and getting to that level where you're sort of doing it well, and then Baker and Mies are just whole other level. You know, they're obviously, that's what they do professionally, and they've got not just the entry but the exit figured out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, both those guys were on another level. Something really interesting was that tires played a big part in it. The tires they were using weren't actually proper flat track tires. They were Michelin wet weather tires, which caused one or two problems. Lots of the Europeans were running the tire in the right way. So, you know, the tread on a wet tire is obviously designed to move water out of the way, But that's not too good when you're flat tracking. So lots of the Americans and Marquez were actually turning the tire around so that they were getting more edges on the track and getting more grip. But unfortunately, that was wearing out the tires more. So guys like Brad Baker were having to buy tires from other riders. Ahead of the super final, Brad Baker gave Albert Arenas €175 for his worn-in rear tire. And the exact quote that Brad Baker had, because Brad Baker still had a brand new rear tire, but he said, "We're not allowed to go out and do some fucking Brodies in the car park, are we?" A Brodie is a donut, for those who may not be aware. And then his team had to say, no, we're not allowed to do that. So then he leant over to Albert Arenas and chucked him almost €200 for a tire, which was, yeah, it was interesting to see that, because you wouldn't really think that something sort of as club level as that would happen at a big event like this. But, you know, they were very strict on their tire allocations. So some riders, unfortunately, did have to buy some off other riders. So, yeah, I was a bit surprised by the whole buying tire thing. But, you know, I guess the tire limit was there. Fair is fair. The other thing that surprised me was just how dirty I managed to get by standing on the inside and outside of the track. Both myself and my camera were absolutely filthy after just a couple of sessions. Part of that was down to the nature of dirt track. It's obviously going to be dirty, as it says in the name. But also, during the first half of the day on Saturday when they were qualifying, the track was very dry. So huge amounts of dust were getting kicked up.
Yeah. You and me both. During the practice, I was covered in fine gold dust all over my coat, and at one point I was eating something and getting a bit of grit at the same time. So I hope that's not anything too bad for you.
Yeah, I unfortunately had that sensation too of I probably should have bought a toothbrush, but it was really good fun. One of the good things about the Super Prestigio is that you can get quite close to the bikes, a lot closer than you could in a MotoGP round, obviously because it's in a concert hall / sports stadium. You are a fair bit closer to the bikes, and they certainly sound good in there.
Yeah, they do. It is a bit loud. I mean, my wife and I were both wearing earplugs, but my sort of gauge of, you know, what kind of an event is it? How fun is it? Would people, not deranged people like you and me, enjoy it? And my wife comes out of it, you know, this year and last year, having had a really, really good time. And I think it's because it's, you know, it's different than road racing. You see it all for one thing. And then there are very, very few lulls. You know, I don't know if people have ever, you know, been to a dirt track or a speedway or, you know, grass track race or anything like that. But by the time they've gotten the guys off the racetrack for one of the races, they've already got the starting thing lined up with the next race. And it's no downtime, constant action, new people. For 3 hours all night long.
Yeah.
Great fun.
Yeah, I think the biggest gap between a race was 5 minutes just before the super final, because there was one or two issues with how many points people had scored. But otherwise, as you say, it really was race, bit of track maintenance, race.
Yeah, it was good. Great, great stuff. I recommend it to anybody who's never seen anything like that.
Yeah, certainly. There were lots of people who came to Barcelona for a bit of a long weekend, you know, flew in on Thursday and flew out Sunday. Obviously, the racing happens on Saturday. So it is a bit of a nice weekend away for the family. But in terms of racing results, it was Brad Baker who won the open class. So I guess we should mention now, the Super Prestigio is broken up into two classes. The open class, which is all of the dirt guys, and then the Super Prestigio class, which is all of the road races. So the top guys from each of those classes then come together in the super final. But it was Brad Baker who won the open class ahead of Jared Mees. And then Fredrik Lindgarden, a Swedish rider, was third, completing the podium there. Then Omori was fourth. And Alan Birtwistle was the top Brit in fifth in the open class. Then in the Super Prestigio class, it was, unsurprisingly, Marc Marquez who won. He took two victories out of four races. Xavi Vierge, he actually came in second, despite having come through the last chance qualifiers. Danny Ribalta, he was third. With Alex Rins, who also came through the last chance qualifiers, he was in fourth. Alex Marquez down in seventh. Interesting about Alex Marquez was, on the program, it said that he was riding a Honda, but in actual fact, he was on a Husqvarna, unless Honda have suddenly developed a white tubular steel motocross bike.
Yeah, I was noticing the same exact thing when we were in the pits. His bike was quite a bit different. You know, nobody else was riding anything like that.
So interesting that there would be a bit of a last minute switch, and it looked like they'd also pulled off all the Husqvarna badges from that bike. So maybe they weren't exactly meant to do that, and maybe I'll be getting an angry email from Mr. Honda.
It's funny mentioning the two Marquez brothers. Did you? Well, I'm sure you caught the race. I'm wondering, did you notice the race that Alex Marquez won?
Yes, I
did. Who followed him around the whole time and never made a move?
I did notice that Mark did follow him around, which probably didn't help Mark with several accusations that have been made. But yeah, that was one of the races that I sort of saw that out of the corner of my eye as I was running up to the commentary box to drop off some information. And then once I dropped off my information, I sort of sat there and said, how is Alex Marquez winning this race? And then, yeah, you saw that Mark was definitely being a bit gentle on his younger brother.
Yeah, even my wife caught that. She leaned over and said to me, if that was anybody else, Mark Marquez would have knocked him off.
Yeah, definitely. Marquez is definitely not afraid of sliding it up the inside and forcing some people to stand up. It was, it was aggressive, you know. Several riders you talked to, they said that it may seem like a bit of fun, but once the visor comes down, every rider there wants to do their most to win, and that no one's really there just to take part and, you know, fulfill sponsorship obligations. Everyone's there to win.
Anybody who's ever raced know that there's no such thing as a fun race.
Yeah, and I mean, some guys were taking it so seriously. Mika Kallio, he broke his fibula on the Friday before the race. So he was in Rufia Thursday, absolutely fine. He tried to get in an extra training session Friday morning and managed to crash and break his fibula. So best wishes to Mika Kallio. But yeah, it was, you know, push, push, push all the time for these guys leading up to the super final. The super final this year was a bit longer. It was 16 laps, and they'd made it longer because obviously it was last year where Jared Mees got forced wide at the first corner and stalled his bike, and because the race was only 12 laps back then, you know, that was sort of race over with only a 200 meter track. But they'd hoped that with a 16 lap race on the 200 meter track, that it would be a bit closer. But it wasn't too close in the super final. I did manage to luckily watch all of the super final. And as you alluded to earlier, Len, Brad Baker was on rails and just looked super, super comfortable cruising around.
Yeah, it was clear that he was, doing what he needed to do. Marquez was catching him up at the end. And again, nobody knows except Baker, was he letting him catch up to be, you know, to make a bit of a show, or was he going as fast as he could? You know, it certainly didn't look like it. But like you said, not a super tight race. It was Baker and Marquez at the front. Mees did get tangled up a little bit in the beginning and then came back. I think he was within, 2.8 seconds. But yeah, still didn't, he was well clear of everybody behind him and just kind of, you know, stuck in the middle.
Yeah, so, I mean, overall the racing was really good, especially in the heats and the final races. There were some really tight races and some really surprising races. So hopefully once the full video of that comes out, everyone out there will be able to get a chance to watch it if they did. Alex Rins managed to secure fourth in the Super Prestigio. As I said, he came through the last chance qualifier. Rins also got taken out during practice by Mark Marquez, who had a bit of a crash. So good that Alex Rins was able to get up there. But yeah, overall, no huge surprises that it was the two Americans and Mark Marquez on the podium. The one of the big questions throughout the weekend, coming back to tyres, was for the Super Prestigio, they use 17-inch tyres, but for almost every other kind of flat tracking or dirt tracking, they use 19-inch tyres. In the American Super Prestigio, they use 19-inch tyres. And this question got brought up in the post-qualifying press conference where someone said, you know, why are we using 17-inch tyres when most people prefer the 19s? And Marquez rather cheekily said, well, I'm here to train, not to have an easy time, so that's why we put on the more difficult to handle 17-inch tyres. It probably also gives Marquez a bit of an advantage that guys like Baker and Mees spend most of the year racing on 19s, whereas he's sliding around on 17s for all the year. So another one that Marquez was, this event seems very much set up so that Marquez can have the best chance he can of winning.
Well, the best part about that is it keeps the conspiracy theories going all winter.
Yeah. Yep, there were definitely one or two conspiracy theories flying around in the background as to why people like Tito Rabat weren't there and, you know, various reasons that Marquez had gotten certain suppliers for some things and some suppliers for not other things. But
It was interesting to not see Tito there. I kind of expected him. You know, I hadn't been keeping up on the entry list or anything before the races. Do you have any info on why he wasn't?
I've heard some rumors that that maybe the Ruffia gang is no more, but I couldn't hunt down anything concrete. But it seems like the trio may now be a duo, and by duo I mean brothers.
That Mark Marquez, he's your friend until you start racing against him.
Yeah, it seems like it's, but yeah, you know, that is a very interesting point to bring up, because, you know, that's the same with Valentino Rossi. You know, you saw that with Gibernau, not really with Biaggi, with Stoner a bit, and Jorge Lorenzo's never really had friends, it seems like. But
well, his dad comes to the races to watch him.
Yeah, that's true. I guess he's still friends with his dad. But no, all of these guys are so incredibly focused that you know, they don't really... maybe they don't want friends, maybe they don't have time for friends, but, you know, none of these top guys are really too interested in girls or anything like that. It's just racing, racing, racing for them.
No, that's what retirement is for. There's plenty of time to have friends later.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I mean, overall, it was a really good weekend. This was the first time I'd ever seen any sort of dirt track live in the flesh, and especially at Ruffia, it was a pretty special experience. You know, there was no hair gel, no sponsors, no umbrella girls. It was a bunch of guys freezing cold in a field, going around in dirt circles, and everyone just having a good time. And it was really refreshing for me, at least, after, you know, a season full of polemics and he said this, he did that. You know, it was nice to just get back to motorcycles. So yeah, I think that from now on, all MotoGP races should be just flat track races.
it'd be great to at least have one warming up the event on a Thursday or something. Yeah, for me, it's great. It's about as close to real pure racing as you can get. You know, because the money isn't crazy, even for all the talk of 30,000 euro bikes and all of that. And it's one of these forms of racing that is simple but definitely not easy.
Yeah. Yeah, it would for sure not easy. I mean, there was also the junior races out there, and, you know, some of the top junior kids were within half a second of Brad Baker's best time, which was pretty incredible. On what were they, on 65cc bikes or something?
Yeah, it was amazing. I had to go back and look at the times, because I was thinking to myself as I was watching it, well, it can't be. They can't really be that close. And they were. And what it's all about, it's funny, you know, the big bikes have so much acceleration, they get going so fast on the straights that they really are super, super slow at the apex. Whereas the little guys, you know, they don't go very fast on the straights, but they don't slow down at all in the corners. They look like, you know, Moto 3 riders.
Yeah, lots of those kids were getting it proper sideways as well. You know, it wasn't just six-year-olds pottering about. Lots of those kids are definitely talented. And I did hear some people mention one or two names in there to keep an eye out on, but unfortunately I can't remember them. But it was good to see the kids out there. Unfortunately, they didn't get quite the same TV time as the Super Prestigio class. But overall, it was a great weekend. And I'm looking forward to next year's. After the race, it was revealed that Marquez had thought about going to the American Super Prestigio, but Honda sort of said, no, you have a test at Jerez. Let's not be silly now, Mark.
Right. Okay. So, well, yeah, because Tony went out there, Tony Elias.
Yeah.
And it seems that, you know, at least the extra weekend of practice was pretty good for him. You know, didn't get him into the super final or anything, but he seemed to be doing pretty well overall this weekend.
Yeah, Elias was another one who was really, really impressive, and who both the Americans said was pretty strong. Although Elias's family, I think, has quite a strong history with dirt tracking, so maybe he had a bit of a leg up there. But Elias was really on it. Some rumors that Elias may be going to BSB next year were floating around the Super Prestigio. So if that's true, BSB could be quite the international series.
It'd be interesting to see another Spaniard potentially winning BSB. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it certainly has been. I think Gregio Lavia was probably the last one off the top of my head. There was something else that I was going to say. Oh, the other thing was that Brad Baker was asked if he would like a go on a MotoGP bike, and if they could do the same sort of thing as the Super Prestigio but on MotoGP bikes. And he said, no, I'm not here to crash my brains out. So no chance of, unfortunately, Brad Baker versing Marc Marquez onto RCVs. And Marquez also turned down the offer to go race a mile, because Brad Baker was telling Marquez that, you know, you get this close to the wall, holding his hands very close together. And Marquez did not seem thrilled by the idea of, you know, shooting down that close to a wall on a dirt track. Speaking of miles, the Indy Mile, obviously with no Indianapolis MotoGP round next season, the air quotes Indy Mile will now run at Austin, so there'll be a mile flat track race before the Circuit of the Americas race for the MotoGP. So all the MotoGP paddock will still be able to get their flat track fix, and maybe this will finally be the time where Marc Marquez goes out on track for a bit, but I somehow doubt it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, but like you said, I can hardly see each of these guys stepping over into the specialty of the other. I mean, the penalty for making mistakes at that level is pretty severe.
Yeah, I mean, look at Troy Bayliss. You know, he went to do a mile. I can't remember which mile it was, or maybe it was only a half mile. Bayliss crashed and, you know, broke his leg, broke his hip, or whatever other various injuries he had. So, yeah, it is pretty brutal out there, even on the dirt. But yeah, good weekend, and I'm looking forward to the next one. You know, as I said, there was no drama, which was really nice. It was just racing. It seemed like everyone had a good time. You know, I had a pretty good time running about like a rat in the pits trying to find out information, and it seems like most of the fans had a good time as well.
Well, I think the next step for you, Harry, will be to get out to the Neues camp and swing a leg over a dirt tracker.
Maybe. The last time I tried to ride a dirt bike, I ended up cracking three bones in my foot, and that was only a 75cc bike.
That's all right.
So, yeah, maybe we'll put the Neues camp on hold. But speaking of Neues, there were one or two updates on Kenny. Kenny was originally going to come and watch the Super Prestigio this year, but he was having minor surgery the next day, so sat and watched it from the couch. And from everything Dennis Neues said, it seems like Kenny is getting better step by step and is still on the path to recovery. So that's very reassuring to hear, because for a while there, things didn't look great for Kenny. But he's definitely still fighting and looking better each day.
Yeah, I got an update last night that the surgery went well. It was all elective surgery. I mean, I talked to Dennis at the race, and he said that it was stuff that they had decided not to do earlier just because they didn't want to go under anesthetic again. But that it was that it all came out okay, and that that Kenny's doing well. So God, we're all pulling for him and hope to see him soon.
Yep, certainly. And that's pretty much the show. As we said, there wasn't too much news. The Super Prestigio, sort of the last big event of the year. Hopefully, we'll have Scott Smart, the World Superbike Technical Director, on a show in the future. Martin is trying to lock him down for an interview. So if you have any highly technical questions, especially about superbikes, then motopod@motopodcast.com is the email address to send in all of your questions to. And hopefully we'll be able to have another nice long off-season interview. Also, we posted a movie. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head now, but if you go on the Facebook page, there is a YouTube to a movie about motorcycle racing that stars Barry Sheen. It is apparently very bad, but in the near future, hopefully we'll be able to do a Motopod movie club about that. Because that's definitely one of the ideas that we've been chucking around for a while, is finally doing a movie club.
So a very bad, even worse than the Silver Racer Star, whatever that movie
was? I think that is the movie. I think it is Silver
Star
Racer.
Oh, is it that one? Okay. Yeah, that's, you're right. It's pretty bad.
So, yep, everyone set your expectations nice and high for that one. I watched about 15 seconds of it, and yeah, it did look pretty bad.
Yeah, it's what you'd expect from the late 70s.
But hopefully it can, a bit of cheese to brighten up everyone's day. And yeah, I guess that's all from me. Len, anything else you want to chuck in there?
No, that's about it for me. I know that you're headed off on a long trip home soon, so have a good trip. Enjoy a bonus month of summer. We're all very envious.
Yes, thank you very much. It looks like the next Motopod will probably be recorded at least partially from Australia, so I'm getting very excited about waking up at some odd times. But yeah, hopefully the Motopod train will keep running. As we said, we'll probably start doing a show every second week during the off-season, unless something huge happens. But right now, it's pretty quiet. Everyone's enjoying their off-season holidays. Also, just a bit of a public service announcement. MCN are currently looking for a MotoGP correspondent. So if you're an up-and-coming rider, do be sure to check out the MCN Twitter account to get details about that. And just remember, everyone out there, the worst anyone can ever say is no. So the best you can do is send out a CV and hope it works out. And that is my sage advice for everyone. And we'll catch everyone next time.
All right. Well, good talking to you again, Harry. And ho, 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 Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.